From Variety, celebrating more than 117 years covering the business of entertainment, this is the Award Circuit Podcast.
That cry from the soul was probably because of, you know, like the things that I can identify with personally about my own security as a father, as a parent, you know, my hopes and aspirations that you're not making all the mistakes that you think you might be, but giving yourself a break for it at the same time. And the mere thought of those circumstances being real for my life, which they are not. What can I say? It breaks my heart.
Brendan Fraser felt a real connection to his character in the film The Whale, and audiences responded, as did Oscar voters, giving the beloved actor a nomination at this year's Academy Awards. I'm Clayton Davis. On this episode of the award-winning Variety Award Circuit Podcast, we're talking to the Oscar-nominated Brendan Fraser about The Whale, as well as his career renaissance and what's coming next. Also on this episode, another Oscar-nominated icon, TAR star Cate Blanchett, who's nominated for Best Actress. But first, on the Award Circuit Roundtable, we recap the SAG Award winners and set the stage as final Oscar voting gets underway. It's all next on this edition of the Variety Award Circuit Podcast. Stay close.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to March. You know what happens in March? Emmy season starts. So let's talk Emmys, everyone. I'm Michael Schneider, TV editor of Variety, and we're just going to hop right over the Oscars and go straight to Emmys because events are happening. It's all looking alive, people. But seriously, I am here with the one and only Jazz Tank, eh?
Hello.
And Janelle Riley, who it's in her rider. She won't sit in the same room with us anymore, unfortunately.
You do not want me anywhere near you right now. Trust me.
We always want you near us, Janelle.
No, not with this thing.
And Clayton Davis.
That's me.
So, gang, it is March. We are getting closer.
12 more
days.
From the time of recording, 12 more days.
Yeah. So even less by the time people are hearing this. I mean, it is home stretch time. But
it's a stretch.
But before we get to Oscars, let's talk about the weekend that was. So PGA, SAG.
Let's start with PGA. And we're gonna make it shorter than the actual ceremony was.
8 hours, right? It was an eight-hour show.
Oh, my goodness.
Everyone at the SAG Awards was complaining about the PGA length.
I was offended. You are not respectful of my time.
How long was it?
4 hours.
That's unacceptable.
For like 10 awards. You are producers. You know how to
do this.
Right,
producers should know better.
You know how to do
but
this.
But that's because like a lot of the award shows right now, like they have this reception, then they have dinner, and then they have the actual awards.
Then they also had honorees. Like everyone, they got a bunch of honorees. Tom Cruise was honored there. It was presented by Sherry Lansing, who spoke for about 10 minutes. His video package was 13 minutes and 25 seconds of all his stuff. And then he spoke for like another 15 minutes. It was like a whole 45 minute like thing. It was just not fun.
That's offensive.
Yeah. But
does that four hours include the cocktail reception, or are you taking just 4 hours of show?
I mean, dinner started at seven, so it was over by 11. So the show started at 7:30. So it was like a 3.5 hour ceremony. But the cocktail reception would start at 5:30. So, yeah.
Wow. Do we know if they at least fed the reporters in the press room?
I don't think there were reporters in the press room, actually.
No?
I don't think there were. If there were, I definitely never even walked over there. Because if you're not there, Mike, I'm not walking over there.
You only serve wine to me. I appreciate that.
You should have seen Mike's face when he asked that question. I mean.
still have not heard from the DGA about that. My public shaming.
It's not working.
It is not, apparently. But yeah, so PGA, I mean, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I saw Sacha Baron Cohen's great lead-up speech.
It wasn't great when it was in hour 3:45. It would have been great at 2:45 or 1:45.
So it would have played better a couple hours earlier.
Yeah, it would have played better earlier in the day.
I thought it was very funny. He gave shout outs to certain producers in the audience and sort of auditioned for their next movies, including Bond.
Yeah, which he wouldn't have made a bad Bond if he was a little younger. But yeah, Everything Everywhere triumphs. That was Top Gun's last stand, essentially, to plead its case. But, I mean, everything everywhere. We're just living it. DGA, PGA, get to in a second SAG. Yeah. It's destined to win Writers Guild this weekend. And then when it does that, it wins all majors. First film since Argo.
Wow.
Argo won Best Picture.
Wow. I mean,
which actually makes me nervous.
Oh, why?
Just because.
Like, I don't know, because it just feels like, you know, ripe for an upset.
Yeah.
Like everything's going too perfectly.
I mean, we should add this caveat that Argo also won BAFTA and Globe, which Everything Everywhere does not have. But the major guild. No one's ever lost Best Picture. No film has ever lost Best Picture with having the four major guilds.
Ever?
Ever.
Wow.
I have goosebumps.
If you have all four. Remember, we're doing a shorter era because SAG started in 94. So, but yeah.
Still.
It's big.
Wow.
Did you just jinx Everything Everywhere All at Once?
Well, I will say, one thing I've been talking about with people is I think one of the things that has helped it most along here is that it's front runner with a small F, even right now. It's not Titanic, undeniable, like we are just going through the motions, even though it may feel like that. Mm-hmm. It's still like...
Well, there's few years where you have a film that is Titanic.
Well,
that
is La La Land was a great example of that, though. Like La La Land, we were like, oh, okay, we're just going through these motions. It tied the record. It's going to happen. And then...
It happened. Yeah.
Well, it was Best Picture for about 2 minutes.
Yeah, that's true.
let's not ever forget that.
Yeah, we're not wrong.
Technically. And we should note that at the WGA, Everything Everywhere All at Once does not have to compete against Banshees of Inisherin.
Yeah,
because it was ineligible.
Yep.
But should we worry, to your point, Clayton, and I don't want to put this out there, but All Quiet on the Western Front, like, should we...
Consider that.
Consider it, because we didn't have it at PGA, right?
I mean, the thing of what's interesting about All Quiet, or anywhere, it's only at, of the four major guilds, it's not at any of them. And BAFTA, it won BAFTA, but it hasn't, it's not anywhere on the guild circuit. So, and listen, we talk about CODA breaking records and breaking stats and stuff like that. All Quiet would shatter stats. Like it literally only has BAFTA, and it's also not nominated for director or editing. Like there's just so, it has no acting nominations. We're talking about, like, guys, this is like big, this is big stuff. I think honestly it Top Gun or Banshee is probably your number two, but I think because we all can't agree on what number two is, it doesn't matter. It's like Nomadland here. Like everyone was trying to look for an alternative to Nomadland. If you can't agree on what number two is, then there is no number two.
Well, drop the mic.
Yeah, boom.
really, drop the mic.
Yeah. Well, so, all right, so we're talking about that on the film side. I joke about like TV, but let's face it, TV does rule.
Yeah.
So, you know, on the TV side of PGA, you know, again, the Bear won for comedy. And
I was a little surprised by that.
As we know, Jeremy Allen White will get to SAG again, but, you know, he won for actor at SAG as well. So, I mean, it is setting up a situation in comedy where it really does come down to Bear versus Abbott Elementary. And I think that's a narrative that is...
For Emmys, you're talking
about? For Emmys, yeah. And that's a narrative that's going to continue.
As the Ted Lasso trailer drops today.
Well, that's the interesting, third wheel. I mean, it's because we haven't seen the new season of Ted Lasso yet. That could change the game again.
There you go.
Janelle's got... She's got the hookup.
I mean, listen, also... We're going to have two big farewell seasons this year in the race, Succession and Ted Lasso, on both sides, former winners. That's it's going to be.
Well, we don't know if Ted Lasso.
We don't know.
Yet.
I'm not convinced this is Ted Lasso's last season. Not convinced.
Thanks,
I know
Brett
they keep
Goldstein.
Saying like it hasn't been formally announced, has it, Michael? You
no, it hasn't been. And honestly, I think there is a world where Ted Lasso continues as a show, maybe even without Sudeikis. Maybe the franchise continues somehow. I don't know.
I love Ted Lasso without Ted Lasso.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's going to be great.
It's like that final season.
Grey's Anatomy.
Remember Laverne and Shirley, the final season where it was just Laverne?
Yeah.
But yeah. They still called it Laverne and Shirley.
Listen, we called this Frasier. It's like Frasier time. You know, we'll get a nice little spinoff out of it.
Yeah. So we'll see. But so there's that on the comedy side. And then on the drama side, now that White Lotus is officially a drama in Emmy land, as White Lotus dominates, it won PGA. And that's, that's going to be an interesting race, too.
Can I just say, a little sad that Severance ends its season one run with no
Me
big
too.
Wins.
Like, yeah. As you know, I went all in on Severance.
I know you did.
Both Adam Scott and the cast for SAG, and I thought one of those might come through.
And then we have a Dropout and Limited ending its run on the Guild circuit, and then SAG, Amanda Seyfried. We'll get to that in another moment. TV movie, yeah. Weird. Is Weird going to win an Emmy?
Weird. It's so good.
It is so good.
I love that. This is why I think TV movie can be fun if they keep doing stuff like this. I just think Fire Island versus Weird is just such a good, no matter who wins, we all win. That is a good top two.
Yeah. Weird was great. And I think that would continue the trend of, Chippendale winning last year.
Yeah.
It's I think that brings some fun to that category.
As long as Prey gets into, I'm a big fan of that.
And don't we then get Weird Al Yankovic closer to an EGOT? The EGOT that he deserves?
Yeah.
He'll
need an Oscar, right?
Yeah, he would still need an Oscar.
And a
Tony.
All?
But
that's all he needs.
We need to work on.
He has a Tony and Oscar, right? Yeah.
Does he have a Tony?
I thought he did have a Tony. I don't know. Where this is bad.
Has there been a weird held Broadway show?
People secretly write stuff all the time, and I forget and I miss it.
This is true.
Just other two notations on PGA side that we forgot to say on the film. Pinocchio finishes its sweep. That's locked and loaded for Oscar. Documentary.
Also won an Annie.
Also won a bunch of Annies. And then Navalny won documentary. That's my pick for Oscar. Now, BAFTA and PGA, I'm feeling good. I'm going with it.
Yeah, I'm switching from Fire of Love.
Yeah, I think it's one of those two.
I mean, Navalny just feels so timely.
Yeah.
I mean, just given the headlines.
Yeah.
And it's not it's not a huge bummer movie. It plays out like an entertaining thriller. Which I think helps a lot.
What is it about for people who haven't seen it?
Navalny, the man who was quote unquote allegedly poisoned. I don't know if we have to be all legal about this. I don't know how we write.
Putin's going to sue us?
I don't know. I'm just going to be just in case. Allegedly, he was poisoned Vladimir Putin.
Clayton is Putin's favorite Oscar prognosticator. Yep. So. He trusts Clayton.
Yeah,
he
loves that Stand with Ukraine stuff I got going on. But yeah, it's really, really well done. And then the speech that the filmmakers made, dedicating it to him, because right now he's in solitary confinement. And this world sucks, man. That's all bad. But Navalny will be hopefully give an opportunity to let the world know what's up.
Yeah.
And then we move to SAG. Before we even get into winners, my favorite award ceremony, probably the last 5 years.
Wow. Yeah, it was really great. Well,
partly because it's short. It's two hours.
You can't be 2 hours, man.
Yeah. And I do love that they kept it to that, even though it was streaming on youtube.com/Netflix, which means they could have kept it going on for as long as they wanted.
Yep.
And no ads.
It was tight, really tight.
Well, you guys saw at home, Janelle and I were in the room.
Humble brag.
When they were transitioning, we just had a clock timer on our screens.
Yeah.
You guys had actual montages and stuff at home. I wish they played the montages
for
us. I would
love the montages.
I know.
Yeah.
Just
and
put
also
the clock
when
over
they
it.
Put those clock timers up, everybody got up and had 2.5 minutes to go talk to somebody.
Or go to the bathroom.
So then every time they came back from the montage, it was so loud in the room. And the presenters had to be like, settle down, everyone, settle down.
Yeah, I love how they threw Fran Drescher in the middle of a big break and everyone was just still standing.
And the In Memoriam too came after a cutaway. Mm-hmm. So it was Don Cheadle had to come out and be very serious and try to present the In Memoriam.
Well, the reason the Don Cheadle thing happened was because White Lotus had 30 tables. There was 100 of them.
Yeah.
It's a big cast.
And then they went up and accepted it. I think he had to wait for all of them to get off. And that took a few minutes.
Yeah, you're right. Because it took looked like it was going to commercial break. But it was just getting the White Lotus cast moving.
It was come on, guys, all of you. But SAG, great show. Film side, Everything Everywhere, the biggest winner in SAG history, Banshees of Inisherin, the biggest quote-unquote loser in SAG history.
Oof. Wow. Mm.
By the way, I predicted a Everything Everywhere All at Once sweep in four of the five categories, but didn't see the one that the
Jamie Lee Curtis
female actor in a supporting role. I had gone with Stephanie Hsu.
I have been hinting at this Jamie Lee Curtis thing for a while, thinking like I'm like she's guys like it's brewing, it's bubbling, and people were saying that Carrie Condon's the upset, you know, kind of, and yeah, yes and no, but. As soon as I walked in, I wanted so bad to change my prediction and just write a quick note. And be like, guys, Jamie Lee Curtis, I knew it. Especially when it started with her, like, I'm an actor. That room erupted. Like, it was volcanic. Volcanic?
Volcanic.
Yeah. In there. Everyone felt it. They love her.
She's making it okay to be a Nepo baby.
I swear.
I love that she says that.
And listen, didn't I? And I said this last week. I said, guys, if it's not going to be Angela Bassett, they need to tell us now because we can have 2 weeks to, like, you know, get used to that idea. Yeah. And I think in 3 seconds, Jamie Lee Curtis, and she gave a great speech overall, but three seconds of her speech made it okay when she said, I get it, Nepo baby, but I'm 64 years old. And then we were like, damn.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah. Yeah. This is
also. I should have been nominated for Freaky Friday and True Lies. So this is way overdue.
I don't like the Trading Places erasure, but sure. Yes. And Fish Called Wanda. All four. She should have many.
But you're right. It is sort of a career win.
Which is, and I'll say this, we can talk about this now, I think people have been reluctant on saying this, is that that's what Angela Bassett was also getting the Oscar buzz for. It was a career recognition. Like, she's great in the movie. So I'm not saying it's a nothing role, but we were giving it to Angela Bassett because she's Angela Bassett. I think now they're giving it to Jamie Lee Curtis for that same reason. The difference between the two is that Jamie Lee Curtis, I think she's fine in the movie. She's the lesser of the four. If you rank the four, I don't hear a lot of people say that she's their favorite part. And Angela is the best part of a movie that people are like, I'm not that big on the movie. So they kind of evened each other out.
Interesting.
Only two movies, by the way, in Oscar history have won 3 acting Oscars. Network and A Streetcar Named Desire both lost Best Picture.
That is astounding to me because I just had some mental block up until this week thinking that Network won Best Picture.
Yeah.
I thought, yeah.
That's the Rocky, like, that's Rocky year.
It actually didn't. It lost to Rocky.
That's crazy. That was a big year.
The best year of Oscars, arguably. 39 and 76. Those are the big ones.
I think it's funny what you said about being in the room. Like, and so many people don't always get to experience that vibe of, like, when you know, like, when you said you knew that Jamie was going to win.
Yeah.
It's like last night at the Costume Designer Guilds when they were reading out, like, best science fiction fantasy costume, and they said Shirley Carrara for Everything Everywhere, and that room erupted, and I was like, she's gonna win, she's gonna beat Ruth Carter, she's gonna beat Deborah Scott.
Yeah.
And then
it's now we're not asking is Everything Everywhere gonna win Best Picture, we're asking how many Oscars is it gonna win. You know, it could be the biggest winner since Hurt Locker in the expanded era and win 6. Like, sure, I think it could even pull 7 and 8, maybe be kind of bananas crazy.
So with the headline, do you go with every Oscar everywhere all at once, or do you go with Everything Everywhere all at Oscar?
Ooh, I like that one.
Right?
Ooh. Yeah. Mm. We have to cut that out because I can't have anyone take that for that night. It's actually really good.
Every Oscar everywhere all at once. Uh-huh.
Well, that's what I just
mean,
said.
That's only if it sweeps.
I'm sick. Cut me some slack.
That's only if it wins 10 out of 11, you can do that. But I like Everything Everywhere All at Oscar. Jamie Lee Curtis, now looking at that race now, and Oscar voting opens Thursday. It's a 3-way race between Kerry, Condon, Banshees of Inisherin, Jamie Lee Curtis, and Angela Bassett.
Is it 3-way?
I'm not giving up on Stephanie Hsu.
Listen.
I'm not. They love in that category, especially quote unquote newcomers.
I would appreciate you not to get my hopes up in this very vulnerable time in my life where I am. It's gonna be crazy. So, BAFTA and SAG are not aligned at all in the acting categories. First time I think since the 80s, maybe that's happened. So, yeah. That they not 80s. No, ever. BAFTA and SAG, never in history have they chosen different winners completely. So online, the popular thing right now is to say split the difference, take two BAFTAs and two SAGs, and that's what you predict. So I think I'm going Michelle Yeoh, Kiyu Kwan, mm-hmm. and then Austin Butler and Kerry Condon. That feels like the safest thing to do.
Wow.
I think I want to take Jamie. I might just end up taking Jamie in the end anyway.
Yeah. That feels like that's
take her. You'll regret it if you don't.
I know. But the one thing, Brendan, and a lot of people were like, oh, it's wrapped up for Brendan. I think, and remember, you always have to break this into voting blocks. Brendan has the actors vote, but the actors isn't, even though the actors are the largest branch of the Academy, they're about 13% of the Academy. The artisans are the largest collective. They're 63% of the Academy.
Right.
Whale's only nominated in makeup. It's not nominated for Best Picture. That's why I think Austin Butler has the edge, because they're going to watch his movie. I think he's going to get the European vote, and then that pushes him over. And we haven't had a Best Actor winner from a non-Best Picture nominee since Jeff Bridges for Crazy Heart, 2009.
Because I think
– and you know – the important thing is that Austin Butler loves pit bulls.
Yeah, really.
You should check out my story on him this week.
I can't believe you didn't put a pit bull on the cover with him. Like,
I could have brought Wilbur in.
Yeah,
they would have gotten along great. Yeah, I have an Elvis jumpsuit. It all could have worked out. I could have put that on Wilbur. And yeah,
I
don't know,
because Elvis will probably get makeup right if we go the BAFTA way, and it did win at
and costumes.
Yeah. It's probably Catherine Martin is loved, so she'll probably get costumes, and then Austin.
Yeah, listen, it can win three. That movie could also win five, because it also could win production. It could also win sound. Like the movie is just like, again, populist choice. It could just do really well, but now we have to get to the most important part, the Michelle Yeoh of this.
Told y'all.
I predicted it, and I just wanted to make sure I was there for it, but I wasn't confident until I heard Jamie Lee Curtis, and I was like, oh, wait, maybe this is going to happen.
Yes, then we all knew.
Then I was like, okay, because that would really suck if it wasn't. And I think that's also what makes Jamie's win okay. If she wins and Michelle wins, I think the world is fine. I think the world will accept it.
They almost feel like a package deal at this point.
Michael, did you read my column? That's exactly what I said. I
don't read your columns, Clayton.
but all this year, I think it was honestly, I said to myself, oh my God, I did it wrong. Cause I thought Michelle was tied to the film winning Best Picture in order for her to win. She's tied to Jamie.
Well, cause they've made it that way. The BFF thing that they've been pushing.
Because by the way, I think inarguably the reason why the movie's doing as well as it is because of Jamie Lee Curtis. Jamie Lee Curtis has promoted this movie in a way that I've never seen anyone be out on the front line for a movie. Maybe in the last decade, she is the biggest champion for the movie. And every time she's out there, what was she on this podcast? What went viral? Her saying Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah, you say like, I say yeah. Michelle. No, you say Yeoh.
It was like that. That's the connection.
By the way, and then add in at the very end the secret. Sort of like the bringing it home is the James Hong.
Yeah. Can I just say, when Michelle Yeoh gave her speech, I said to myself, I was like, damn, I wish her speech was better, that like she would have locked it up. And then James Hong said, nah, I got this. I'll take it from here. Yeah. And I was like, thank you, James Hong.
Yeah.
Michelle Yeoh, you're winning an Oscar now, I think.
92-year-old?
94.
94-year-old James Hong. Just turned 94. Like, bringing down the house.
A year younger than Oscar itself.
By the way, I want to say something really funny.
I'm 92. That's what I was trying to remember his age.
I did a virtual Q&A with the cast of Everything Everywhere All at Once, and James Hong just started asking them questions. And it's available on YouTube under the SAG AFTRA Foundation channel. And he's just like, he was just genuinely curious. And he's eating dumplings the whole time because it's Super Bowl Sunday and he's hungry. Yeah. And he's just
the best. That's a baller move. Yeah. That is a baller move.
But yeah, I think because of that, Michelle might do it.
Of course. have never wavered since that movie premiered.
You have to acknowledge that there is a pathway for her to lose because she's lost everything up until SAG. I mean, she won Globe, but so did Kate, and then Kate beat her at BAFTA and the Globes. I mean, BAFTA and Critics' Choice. Yeah. And Critics' Choice loved that movie. There was no reason for Critics' Choice not to do Michelle, and they still went.
But Critics' Choice aren't Oscar voters.
I mean, yes, that's true.
Neither is Globes. They just aren't.
But BAFTA was
the one concern. Yeah. But I always knew Michelle would at least take SAG because, oh my God, how obviously, as we saw, actors love that movie.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it does feel like timing is everything. And as voting opens, there is that momentum.
And SAG is last. And I think someone mentioned something to me. They were like, maybe we're always like, oh, SAG is last, you know, BAFTA is last. I think maybe it's just whoever's last really makes the biggest impact on what happens. Because last year, you know, it was SAG right after Ukraine, but then BAFTA went last year. And we knew CODA was winning Best Picture because it won Adapted Screenplay. And then I go back to the year of Michael Clayton, Tilda Swinton won BAFTA. That's the only thing she won. And then she won Oscar.
Yeah.
So, and Marion Cotillard also won BAFTA and then won Oscar. So maybe it's just whoever's last, that is the biggest kick that you get.
The Last of Us.
Fresh in the mind.
The Last of Us.
Michael Clayton.
I know. It's crazy to me.
I do think of us as a young Clooney.
Janelle, we need a movie. Janelle Jazz or Jazz Janelle. Yeah.
By the way, how do you say Jazz your Janelle? First name?
Calientón.
No, no. How do you say your first name?
Clayton. I say Clayton, but I know that there are people who really pronounce it.
Clayton.
Yeah.
Clayton.
If I say my name, I say Clayton, but you can say Clayton.
Clayton. I like to say the T.
Do you like to say the T?
Yeah. I give you respect.
I let people – whatever makes you feel good.
Yeah.
Me through Davis.
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 That's why Viola's my mom because we are related. Michelle Yeoh, I think she, we'll see what happens. We have 5 days of Oscar voting. I start making all my calls this weekend and be like, what are you voting for? And then that's when you get – all the insight.
Well, let's talk TV real quick.
Of course.
I'm bringing it back. Because
Abbott Elementary.
Yeah. And so relieved for Abbott to win. Since we, didn't see Quinta win and, you know, it was starting to go in a concerning place.
Well, because we started with Jessica Chastain and Sam Elliott. Both upsetting.
Yeah, which neither of which we expected. But in hindsight, realized, of course, the SAG voting body is 160,000 strong. So and it's a huge middle America vote as well, because don't forget SAG-AFTRA includes the folks who used to be part of AFTRA. So all the radio DJs across the country.
Paramount Plus with Showtime, those lovers.
And a lot of folks who, you know, don't pay as much attention to things, so they're going to vote on what they watch, which is a lot of, you know, Yellowstone in 1883. So, and who doesn't love Sam Elliott? I mean, yeah. You can't
by the
argue
way,
against Sam
he's
Elliott.
Fantastic in that.
By the way, that was his last run with 1883 because it's not eligible next year, right? No. It was shut out last year at the Emmy. So,
yeah, we're no harm, no foul, moved on really to 1923.
No harm, no foul to Evan Peters. So he can still win it on the Emmy circuit.
And then on the female actor in a miniseries side, Amanda Seyfried had already won all the awards. So I guess, you know, it's fine that Jessica Chastain
dress, by the way, though.
Jumps in. But that still was an interesting choice because I don't know how many people had seen George and Tammy.
Jessica was out here promoting a lot. She was doing a lot of screenings and stuff. And I know when she speaks to actors – She speaks to actors.
Yeah, I mean, listen, SAG is like the best thing you can be as an actor's actor. And if you are that, then you are good with the group.
And then Jean Smart. So,
I mean, it's not smart to not pick Smart.
Right.
You know, you got to just pick her every time.
And then male actor in a comedy series. I mean, Jeremy Allen White, he's got the momentum right now. And when the Only Murders guys cancel each other out and the Barry guys cancel each other out to some degree, then, of course, that leaves Jeremy Allen White.
I don't know if you noticed this, but by the way, I think, and I'm doing like a very like overview really quickly in my head, I think Jeremy Allen White and Jessica Chastain were the only winners under 50 years old from the SAG Awards. It was very, veteran, like a veteran heavy, like lineup. They were like really paying homage to the vets of the biz.
Yeah. Well, so male actor in a drama series, you know, justice for Bob Odenkirk.
Oh man, I can't believe that.
So I was a little surprised by Jason Bateman's win, but I guess not necessarily.
But we said it here. We were like,
we did. Actor's actor.
See, what do you do? Three out of four for Ozark?
So
like at SAG?
Yeah. So
and no Emmys, which is weird.
Yeah. But we knew he had the momentum. So, yeah. And you know, the Saul guys to some degree would cancel each other out, I suppose.
I got to watch him get his statue engraved.
Ah.
They had a little engraving station on site at the after party. And he was like one of the last people to come in and he got the engraving done.
Yeah. But TV, I mean, and then White Lotus Ensemble.
Yeah, which, you know, it's...
So many of them.
But that's, you know...
So many.
They were tearing up the after party, too.
Yeah.
They were a big group, yeah.
It's a White Lotus world. So that was not so surprising either. But some interesting picks there.
So we have Oscar voting ahead. We have ASC this weekend, Writers Guild, where Everything Everywhere is expected to win.
What about Adapted? What are you predicting in Adapted?
Women talking, I think, but watch out for Top Gun, I guess, just to cause some ruckus.
Clayton, the name of the movie is Women Are Talking.
Can I just say, my God.
Speaking of, that was...
What a choice.
That was a choice.
What a choice. You know what? I like Mark Wahlberg as an actor when he does...
He's a very good actor.
When he stays in his lane, I think he's a very good actor. But to do the Women Are Talking and then considering some history that he's had, and I think it was quite a choice to have him.
And do you think the producers at the SAG Awards, were they just not thinking?
Maybe they just didn't put two and two together.
I mean, I don't know. That was the one thing where unfortunately that was the last presenter of the night, and to like kind of leave on that note. Luckily, it was quickly forgotten as everything everywhere all at once.
And it probably would have dominated, especially if it was. But I think Everything Everywhere sweeping the night was like, okay, we can drown that out. But yes, social media was ablaze.
Yeah. And I think rightfully because it was a real unfortunate choice.
And did you notice that the entire room stood for all of James Hong's whole speech?
Yes. No one ever sat down.
He talked
forever and was fine. I was like, go ahead, sir. You're allowed.
Yeah. Because, again, they were on YouTube.com/Netflix.
So. interesting. Do you want to know who was in the room that you didn't know was probably in the room? Bill Murray. Because I went up the escalator with him.
Well, he was literally in my eye line the whole night, so I found myself like kind of watching Bill Murray a lot.
I was trying to wonder why he was there, but yeah. And Beck Bennett was also there.
Someone told me he was with I'm blanking on the name of the person, but I shouldn't have started this because now I'm just going to spread misinformation. But he was there as a guest, and he was at the Fableman's table.
That's interesting.
But yeah, that's it. That's all we wrote. So our final podcast of this voting period or phase two period, because our last one
was Jeannie Berlin. He was with Jeannie Berlin.
Oh, there you go. Oh, she was there. I would have loved to see her. It's going to be Brendan Fraser, SAG winner, and Cate Blanchett, BAFTA winner.
Going out with some heavy hitters.
Going out some heavy hitters. Brendan Fraser, video, so you can watch him. Along with the others, like the Daniels, Austin Butler, Colin Farrell, and Jamie Lee Curtis. Enjoy it.
Enjoy. But we'll be back here next week again.
Yep. We do have final predictions. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I was thinking that like Clayton. The Oscars were this Sunday. Like, I swear to God.
Calm down.
Oh,
settle down.
You wish. You wish.
I said at the top of the episode, it was like 12 more days. Yeah.
We still And after that, after the Oscars, we still come back and talk about it. So you aren't getting rid of us this fast. We're continuing forever. We never
end. Not going anywhere.
So until next week, bye-bye.
Bye, friends.
After the break, Oscar nominee and The Whale star, Brendan Fraser. From Los Angeles, this is the Awards Circuit Podcast. And we're back. It's the Variety Awards Circuit Podcast, and I'm Clayton Davis. Brendan Fraser's massive popularity has helped play a role in the revitalization of the 54-year-old actor's career. That includes Fraser's first ever Oscar nomination for Best Actor via his towering performance in Darren Aronofsky's The Whale. The Whale is a stark, dour examination of regret and addiction, wrapped into the script written by Samuel D. Hunter, who adapted his play of the same name. Distributed by A24, The Whale tells the story of Charlie, an obese gay man who reconnects with his estranged 17-year-old daughter Ellie, who's played by Sadie Sink, after leaving her and her mother for his younger male lover. In addition to Fraser's nod for Best Actor, Hong Chau is nominated for Best Supporting Actress.
You don't have to be angry at the whole world. You can just be angry at me.
Okay, you know what? You can't throw me away like I'm a piece of garbage and then suddenly just want to be my dad 8 years later. You left me for your boyfriend. It's that simple. And if you've been telling yourself anything different, then you're lying to yourself. But you know what? I'm glad. I'm glad because you taught me something very important. People are assholes. Most people learn that way too late. You taught me that when I was 8. Thank you for that.
As we wait and see whether Fraser's name will be called from the Dolby Theater stage on March 12th, one point should not be lost. He has always been a gifted actor and a bona fide movie star. Next up, Fraser will star alongside Leonardo DiCaprio, Jesse Plemons, and Lily Gladstone in The Killers of the Flower Moon, from Apple Original Films. Directed by Martin Scorsese, the film is set to premiere at this year's Cannes Film Festival. He is also set to star opposite Josh Brolin and Peter Dinklage in Brothers from Max Barbacow, the director of Palm Springs. The plot has been kept under wraps, but Fraser reveals exclusively to Variety that it's a heist movie in which he plays a jailer and Peter Dinklage and Josh Brolin play fraternal twins. And even though Warner Brothers yanked Batgirl from release, Fraser is not necessarily done with the DCEU. He says he's open to coming back for more projects if asked by DC studio heads James Gunn and Peter Safran. For this week's episode of the Variety Awards Circuit Podcast, we sat down with Brendan Fraser to discuss the Renaissance and what this past year has meant to him. We also play a little game called Whose Babe Is It Anyway, where Fraser guesses which of his former co-stars said a particular line. I get to refer to you by your God-given name now, Academy Award nominee, Brendan Fraser. How does it feel, man? It finally got here. We've arrived at the moment.
It was given by the Academy, not by God.
That is true, yeah. Both. We can say both.
The Academy is God.
Yeah.
I feel happy. I feel humbled. I feel honored. I feel a strong sense of anticipation. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if this is as good as it gets, I'm good. I really enjoyed the journey so far.
Yeah. Well, it's been a great journey to see you be on because, you know, listen, you have garnered a lot of love and goodwill, not just industry wise, from consumers and regular people. Regular Joe Schmo movie lover loves Brendan Fraser, and that's the best people you can have on your side. This ride for The Whale, it's been long. Obviously, started in Venice, but
Have you been enjoying it? Have you enjoyed the, the slog of award season?
I have. It's my first. So it's, you know, I feel like the new guy in a lot of ways.
Yeah. When you were on the, during Gods and Monsters, did you do a lot of campaigning then?
No, that was for, Bill Condon's Best Adapted Screenplay.
Winner.
And
Ian McKellen.
Ian McKellen's nomination. I tagged along, I think, at a few press conferences, if I remember.
Yeah, I tagged along.
But it was about, Ian.
Yeah. About you too, because you're great in that, movie. I just want to get your, you know, unless I know it is an honor to be on this, award circuit. But Emma Thompson, I remember speaking about, award season. She said it like physically made her ill because it's such a mental thing for so many months. There's got to be some times that you just feel like exhausted. You're like, I just want to rest. Do you feel that?
Sure. I always feel like a nap. Are you kidding?
Yeah, so it's worth
I'm like an Olympic napper.
Yeah.
You catch me warming up for a nap.
let's get a little bit into the movie. And you know, we've spoken a lot about it, but Darren Aronofsky, very, very good filmmaker. Yes. Very, very good filmmaker. He's been at this for a while. You get this opportunity to take a swing on one of his projects. What did you feel? Were you intimidated by the play?
I had a little bit of a creative intimidation going into it, feeling like he and I, in a way, came up in the industry at the same time, different disciplines, but you know, but I feel like we're, definitely generational peers. And for the work that he did, which I really admired from his onset, when I met him, I didn't know what to expect, honestly, but was delighted that he was a gentleman. He was committed to being really inclusive in terms of how he needed to get this role of Charlie cast, what it would take for him to create the character. He was quite politic in the conversation. I didn't know if I had the job or not for some time.
Kept in the edge of your seat waiting?
Yes, with great anticipation. And at the same time, I felt like if I'm not right for it, he knows best. That's the implicit trust that I have in him as a – that I've learned to have, certainly for having had worked with him as a filmmaker.
Yeah, that's amazing. And this cast, Hong Chow, Academy Award nominee Hong Chow, I can say that now too, was a guest on this very podcast this year, along with Sadie Sink. Ty Simpkins, who is very, very talented young man, and obviously a great script by Samuel Hunter. And you guys, you know, we say this a lot and we hear it a lot, you know, we're family, but you guys, we're really family-like. Tell me what the experience has been like with all of them.
Clearly, we became closer. It's a small cast. It's a chamber piece that takes place in Charlie's apartment in somewhere north Idaho. It's five characters in search of salvation. As families go, we created that dynamic for having had 3 weeks to rehearse this. And it was, you know, that's unusual. A24 was very generous with the time. Thank you for that. It was a requirement of Darren's, so they definitely respect his wishes as a filmmaker. And he wanted to approach this in the same way that he had originally seen The Whale, which was on stage in 2012 in New York, as if we were a theater company, which he declared on day one of our rehearsal. There was a taped out floor, 1-to-1 scale of the apartment, standby props. We watched one another's scene work. It was like, kind of like going back to conservatory training in Seattle when I was 1,000 years ago. And so we created that bond, that family in that way at that time. You know, you make all your mistakes and your discoveries and then bring that to the built set. And there's a feeling of confidence that I had knowing I know my job. I know the scenes. I know the work. I know my castmates. And, you know, we were all working clearly under challenging conditions, granted that there was a pandemic. This is before the vaccines. So we were all taking a risk to be there. And I don't mean just the cast, the crew, everyone wanted to be a part of this. Really had, you know, a lot at stake.
Yeah. I mean, I can imagine that. And just looking, at some of the scenes throughout the film, and I think you're extraordinary, by the way, in the film. And I always, when I'm watching a movie, identify the clip, the scene that proves it, why is Brendan Fraser in contention. And the scene for me that floors me is, I want to know I did one thing right in my life. Like the, it's, I call it like the, it's not that you're crying. It's the cry in the voice. It's like the parental wail. I talk about that sometimes, like that desperation to be worthy enough to be a parent. There's a lot of things wrapped into that. Can you talk about getting in mode for that scene with the amazing Samantha Morton, who's on the other end of that exchange?
Sam Morton is, there's something translucent about her as an actress, and there's something really authentic about her too. Like if it is, if she's not feeling it, it's not going to happen, but she's a wellspring of emotion and ideas. And just, I mean, I could take our time to just talk about how great Sam Morton is, and it wouldn't be telling you anything new. But
she's the queen of One Scene Wonders this year, by the way. She had that, and she said, and like, she only needs one scene to just floor you. That's it. That's, you know, that's her thing.
One and done.
I'm good with that. Go ahead, please.
I was, well, the scene is that he is begging the cooperation of his former wife in a half-baked plea to set his daughter up financially, be taken care of, because he knows that his time is so limited, days or hours at that point, and the strained relations that he has with her from their divorce and her feelings of abandonment all come to the surface when they confront one another in this scene, not having seen one another for 8 years. And his plan isn't working out. He is desperate, to say the least. And that cry from the soul was probably because of, you know, the things that I can identify with personally about my own security as a father, as a parent, you know, my hopes and aspirations that you're not making all the mistakes that you think you might be, but giving yourself a break for it at the same time. And the me, the mere thought of those circumstances being real for my life, which they are not. What can I say? It breaks my heart. And, you know, you want to know as a parent sometimes, am I doing this right? And the answer is, the answer comes from someone else. Yes, you are, is the answer. And Charlie's, well, like I say, he's quite desperate.
She doesn't have anyone else. I need to know that I have done one thing right with my life.
And speak frankly, and I want to get your take on this, because I feel, and it could be wrong, your feelings on the movie from anyone who's seen it, I think varies from how you see Charlie and how you see the movie. If you see it as I see it, which I think is an addiction story, then I think it's accessible to you, and then you're able to get past a lot of the, you know, the criticisms that have been out there about the movie, about Charlie being overweight. But I think if you can't see that part, that may be where you can't connect with it. Has that been disappointing for you to see that some people just aren't quite seeing it the way you see it, or even the way I see it?
I respect all opinions. How do you see it? I don't know how you see it. You said it's an addiction story, so there's a compulsion that he has through
there? It's an addiction to food. It's not, you know, I don't think it's presenting him as like this horrible person that just likes to eat. Like addiction comes in different forms.
Absolutely.
That's how I saw it, and that's why I identify.
Concur.
And see it.
I do concur. Yeah. And the Obesity Action Coalition feel the same way, who are our advisors on the project. Indeed, Charlie does not eat for pleasure. His is a diet comprised of 100-year-old food processing industry that leans heavily on empty calories, palm sugars. Make it taste good so that you get many, many of them in your body as a consumer has been the business model. And in a way, it's not fair.
Yeah.
And I think that's a personal view.
Sure.
I'm not taking anyone on here, but mm-hmm. I know it would put Charlie on his back foot for being vulnerable as he is, as I grew to understand from the OIC that it's done the same with many, many, many people in our society who we don't know enough about because we don't pay closer attention to them. This is a story that's told behind a closed door. And to go inside that world takes courage and to accept the invitation without furrowing your brow. And if there are those audience members who don't take the time to not judge the book by its cover, yeah. I think that I'm hopeful that we'll have had reprioritized what they think is important and isn't important about how we treat those who live with obesity.
Yeah. I think you made a perfect point is seeing it. If it wasn't hard to watch, then the movie would not be good because it should be hard to watch. Cause that, if that is what happens for individuals, like we should get the real.
It would be a horrible mistake to put quotation marks around any of this scene work, design of Charlie's body. I can't speak to how it was shot, you know, in terms of what's been criticized as a genre piece. But I do know that this is a story of a man who lives in a dark place and almost nautically, he is a lighthouse in a dark place at the same time.
So, thank you. Thank you very much for that. Gets a little bit of fun stuff now. Because
lighten up is what you're saying.
We're going to talk light now, but I don't know how much lighter it's going to be. Because today, time of recording, Killers of the Flower Moon confirmed to be going to the Cannes Film Festival.
It is going to go to Cannes.
It is going to Cannes Film
Festival. That's news. I didn't know that.
And one Brendan Fraser is in that movie. And I would imagine I'd see you in May in the lovely backdrop of France. What can you tell us about it besides everything that it's about and what to expect?
Well, it's the Indian Osage Nation story from 1920 when the FBI were formulating to investigate a series of grisly murders that were happening among the First Nations. And I don't know about you, but I didn't hear about this atrocity in school. When I read Killers of the Flower Moon, it's not fiction. It reads like a page-turner murder mystery, but it's engrossing because it's the truth. There's a blight on our history, and this is why Scorsese wraps his arms around the big themes that we're going to see on screen. I don't know its running time.
3 hours and 20 minutes was the last rumored time, but wow. I mean, it's a Scorsese movie.
Incredible, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was like shooting – it felt like as close as I think – as I would get to it, ever being in, I want to say like an, this might sound funny, like an opera. I mean, everything was so heightened.
Yeah.
It's so many of the departments and assistants, they just had so much more detail. And everything just felt like it was dialed up to genius mode. And to watch Scorsese in action would be what I would imagine watching somebody play, you know, three-dimensional chess, just solving problems, just quick, all the time. It was inspiring. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm sorry that your follow-up to The Whale has to be Martin Scorsese's movie with Leonardo DiCaprio and Jesse Plemons and Lily Gladstone, by the way. Like, I'm really excited for it. So,
oh, good.
Me too. Thank you for not telling me, but telling me stuff. I appreciate that. Let's talk about Brothers, Max Barbacow, Palm Springs, one of my favorite movies of that year. I love him. And you're working with, again, Josh Brolin, Peter Dinklage, Glenn Close, Taylor Page, just a bunch of nobodies. But what can you tell us about that? Because plot is a little unknown.
It's a heist movie. There are jewels at stake, which have been mysteriously buried, possibly inside a cadaver.
Okay.
And, fraternal twins Josh Brolin and Peter Dinklage, who are very funny together, let me tell you, are harangued by yours truly, a renegade. I think I'm a jailer. Yes, I'm a jailer. I mean, that's right. I think it's been a couple of years. I'm in a uniform. I'm very angry. I'm going to come and get them and things. And, well, they might end poorly for me, but it's a comedy. So, bring the clown shoes and the red noses and the squirting flowers.
Cannot wait for it. You're sitting here today, so I think you listen to instructions. You have Batgirl in your pocket, right? Like, you just leak it and we can just like see. We want to see it, man. Like,
I don't.
God.
You and me both.
I know, man. All right, let me ask you, because I know you were the villain in Batgirl. Are you done with the DCEU in general? Like, could you still come back into it? Have you had any conversation with Peter or James?
No. I've not spoken to them, but anything is possible.
Yeah.
It's all contingent
on what it goes. You'd be open to it.
Of course. Yeah, I'm an actor. I want to work.
That's all right. That's what you do, right? You're like, right. You want to work. Yeah, absolutely. Would you ever consider doing a season of White Lotus? Now that Doom Patrol, my heart breaks for that. We look for your next project and HBO, next season of White Lotus, maybe a...
It didn't cross my mind. Jennifer Coolidge is a friend of mine. We worked together on a play a number of years ago called Elling that had a glorious 27 public performances before they posted notice on us. But that's another story altogether.
Okay.
Man, she's funny. I'd rather watch her work now.
I think it was generated through social media. I think you'd be a good fit for Mike White. Yeah, go for it.
I'll open my eyes.
In this, and we're going to put this in air quotes, comeback of Brendan Fraser, the Renaissance. What kind of offers are you getting now? Because I don't want the Renaissance ever to end. I want you to work forever.
Easy. Right now I'm learning it's awards season. So not that much business gets done until March 13th, I think.
Any big things coming up that you want to tell me that you haven't told anyone else?
Nope.
Nothing?
I got nothing, man. I would say if I did. But I got this movie with Max Barbico, Josh Brolin, and Peter Dinklage. Okay. Glenn Close, it's called.
Yep. And Martin Scorsese's movie. Yeah. On Apple Original.
That's what I'm good for.
Yeah, that's what you're good for? Okay. Yeah. That's fine. We'll let it slide. The last thing is, this is the most fun you're going to have today. We're playing a game with you.
Okay.
And it's titled, Whose Babe Is It Anyway? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read you a line from one of your many leading ladies that you've had throughout all your films, and you're going to try to guess which lady said it. Now you have to go through your history, so we're going to try to keep it nice and easy for you. Start with this. I have a confession to make. I think about you more than I ought to. Who said it?
Evelyn Carnahan.
Ooh, no.
Fresh Nugs number 2 in Encino Man.
That'd be cool. We're going to talk about Encino Man at the end, by the way. Sally Wheeler, Amy Locaine, David, your David Green school ties.
Busted.
It's all right. We got you.
I have a secret. I think about you more than I ought to.
Let's go to We're Not Lovers, We're Roommates, and We Respect Each Other's Space.
Ah, that was Moira Kelly's character in With Honors.
Very good.
Uh-oh. Is this a lover's quarrel? Maybe I should leave.
We're not lovers. We're roommates, and we respect each other's space.
Moira Kelly, where is she? I'm good for it. I'd like another more. I'm a big fan of The Cutting Edge. That's like my whole D.B. Sweeney, man. It's my jam. Ready for her to come back anytime she feels like it. Did you fight a crocodile for this?
That was from Rita Farr in Doom Patrol.
No.
What?
No.
Yes, it was.
Ursula Stanhope.
Oh my God. You're right.
Leslie Mann, George of the Jungle.
Oh man, I was thinking about Cliff Steele in Doom Patrol fighting an alligator who swallowed his father's watch.
Did you fight a crocodile for this?
Oh. No, George, not fight. Crocodile have toothache.
Sadie Sink, by the way, when she was here, told me that she finally saw George of the Jungle.
Oh,
she's
so busted.
Yeah.
She
hasn't seen Bedazzled yet, so her and I are going to have words about that. But yeah,
but isn't that funny? Sadie had seen nothing that I had done. Which is perfect.
But it proves the evolution of time, man. It's like really, it's starting to hurt. Like, it's starting to really hurt. I'm like, why haven't you seen that yet? It's like a requirement.
She's like, as I wasn't born yet. That's why.
Oh, God. Jesus. No more Sadie Sink talk here. It's nice to meet a grown man who's still afraid of his mommy.
Nice to meet a grown man who's not. I give up. Who?
Connie Doyle. Ricky Lake. Mrs. Winterbourne.
It's great to see a grown man still afraid of his mommy.
Fan of the Ricky Lake Show?
I was.
I love the Ricky Lake Show.
I did too.
She's my jam.
She always had rousing conversations and interesting guests.
Oh, men, always pulling legs. Everything is comedy. Oh, how very amusing. How marvelously droll.
I don't know.
Hint, you played my name.
Ah, yes. That would have been Lynn Redgrave in Gods and Monsters.
Academy Award nominee Lynn Redgrave.
Oh, man. Always pulling legs. Everything is comedy. Oh, how very amusing. How marvelously droll.
What do you remember most about her?
She was so lovely. She came to the first day of work with her own costume that she had put on to play the maid.
Uh-huh.
And she had little slips of paper with little prayers in Hungarian that she'd gotten from a housekeeper somewhere to mutter under her breath. And she showed up with this accent that she had worked up. And I can just remember watching Ian and Bill, I just watching them adore her. I remember sitting in that little studio behind that swimming pool where we rehearsed the film. And she was just a treasure. And boy, was she funny too. And it's spirited. She brought like a theatrical energy to the project, but it was appropriate because she was effectively being kind of like one of James Whale's characters from his films, you know. So she paid close attention to Bride of Frankenstein and to kind of get that sort of heightened mid-Atlantic, you know, energy going to the performance that she gave. Oh, she was lovely.
Ah, best.
Yeah. Should be missed.
Yeah. Here's the next one for you. She's got bitch written all over her. You do know what bitch means, don't you?
That's got to be Clay. Who's that? Is that Cliff Steele? Who is it?
Eve. Blast from the past. Alicia Silverstone.
Oh, right. I thought this would have been my line. I would never say something about it.
It's your lady. It's your lady's line.
Oh, she said that. Oh,
she said that.
She's got bitch written all over her. Okay, yeah. I can remember seeing Alicia.
I think she's very attractive.
Adam, she's got bitch written all over her. You do know what bitch means, don't you?
Very popular favorite among the internet. When we talk a lot of, I mean, obviously Mummy comes up heavily, but Blast from the Past, interestingly, number two a lot for you. What do you remember most fondly, especially about Alicia, who's kind of having her own second wave at the moment, which is fun to see.
She's always perennial. I mean, it's Alicia. She's delightful. She was very, she was fun. She was like they would say, a great gal. And the movie itself, it was a love letter to being a gentleman. Hugh Wilson was its director and co-writer, I believe, who said that it was touching. He said that he was a great admirer of his father. And you think about, you know, a son saying that, I admire my father. I mean, he must have had a very interesting relationship with him at the same time, you know, being his father's son. But he lived by the creed that a gentleman is someone who endeavors to make those around him or her as comfortable as possible at all times. And that's the movie
right
there.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I know I've been really naughty, haven't I? Maybe a good spanking is in order.
I got nothing, man.
No? I even gave you a little bit of the accent, too.
Good spanking is
good in order. Good spanking's in order. The devil.
Oh, it's the devil Liz. Herself. It's Liz Hurley.
Liz Hurley.
Who else could get away with saying that line and not getting slapped in the face? But Liz.
Oh, yeah, you've been a really big help so far.
I know. I've been really naughty, haven't I? Maybe a good spanking's in order.
I love Bedazzled, man. That's my quiet, like... if you get me on a day, I'll always say Encino Man first, but... Like, I really want to say Bedazzled. I, like, love that movie. It's just, I think it's fun. And Francis, I think, is incredible in it. It's just a good old.
Everyone was great.
It's great.
It's an ensemble movie. 7 movies in one.
Yep. Maybe a little bit of a curveball, but the heirloom, your grandmother's ring. But the heirloom.
Ah, that's from $20.
No.
That was about an heirloom, too. Okay, what was it?
Henry Selick's
Monkey Bone. That would have been Bridget Fonda.
Yes.
The heirloom ring, your grandmother's ring.
What? You want a used ring?
Bridget Fonda, another one that, you know, legend in her own right. Family legend, but also just was a great actress. Mm-hmm. Do you remember great stuff from Monkey? Monkey Bone always gets like crap, and you and I have spoken about this. They give crap, and we're like, show respect, man. Monkey Bone is great.
Nothing but love for the bone.
Yeah.
Monkey Bone is one of those unique movies that is an acquired taste, mm-hmm. or it's indicative of being kind of a cine/nerd's calling card.
Yep. Only the cool kids like Monkey Bone.
Have you seen Monkey Bone?
Yeah. Only cool kids like it. I would like the locks changed again in the morning. And you know what? You might mention that next time we'd appreciate it if they didn't send a gang member.
Oh, that was Sandy Bullock in Crash.
Yes, Best Picture winner, Crash.
That's right.
I would like the locks changed again in the morning. And you know what? You might mention that we'd appreciate it if next time they didn't send a gang member.
A gang member.
Yes.
I mean, listen, that movie is stuck in Oscar history for being the one that beat Brokeback Mountain, but, you know, it's also something very timely. Like, everything kind of speaks to prejudices. Do you remember anything fondly of that?
It's a product of its time.
Yeah.
The issues remain. I don't think it offered up any easy solutions in the film Crash. It wasn't a movie that was rubbing your nose in anything, but at the same time, it was showing you something and daring you to look away, kind of like what Darren does.
Yeah.
You know, unflinching that way. It was definitely eye-opening, and it had.
Were you at the Oscars, by the way, that year?
I wasn't. I was with Sarah Michelle Gellar in Mexico City shooting a film called "The Air I Breathe."
Yes,
and we were sitting in a shot maker, which those of you watching is like you put a vehicle on the back of a flatbed and drag it around, and it looks like you're driving it. Anyway, we got the word that it won. We were like, yay. But we had lost a wheel off the back of the shot maker earlier, so we were pulled over to the side of the road when we got the message. And no joke, we hired a mariachi band all the way back to the base camp because the guys were just there on the streets of Mexico. So we had cervezas and really big guitars.
And winning Best Picture on the side. Look at that.
It's a party.
All right. Let's go to look. I may not be an explorer or an adventurer or a treasure seeker or a gunfighter, Mr. O'Connell, but I am proud of what I am.
George of the Jungle.
George of the Jungle. Exactly.
It's Evelyn.
Evelyn, Rachel Weisz.
You're a gunfighter, Mr. O'Connell, but I am proud of what I am.
The Mummy is Brendan Fraser jam. It's like canon Brendan Fraser. Like when you are everything that we think of Brendan Fraser, we think of that like a whole time of our childhood and young adulthood. What did it feel like to work on those movies? And would you ever do another one?
Oh, I'd love those movies. Like great fun to make. They're thrill rides. They work best when they're, you know, boo scary, not like horror, scary, you know, make you want to do it again.
Yeah.
I love popcorn movies. I don't know. I'm not ruling anything out. is the answer. I loved making that film. Yeah. It was a big break for me. Steve Summers was a filmmaker out of USC with Bob Doucet, his editor. They met when they were in film school.
Editor of Glass Onion. Look at that. Like, life comes full circle. How about that, this year. We got all the contenders in the running.
Yeah. It's fun. A lot of really talented people were employed in The Mummy because at that time, special effects were not in their nascency, but ones that didn't make you go, I see how you did it, for what the standards were then. Now it might seem kind of quaint and you know, sort of janky, video gamey looking, but there's some charm to that too. Yeah. But but ILM was at the top of their game. It was John Burton was working it in those days.
Last one. You think I'm an idiot? You think I would believe that you were coming over here out of the kindness of your heart?
I know this. I don't know this. What is this?
Sam Morton. Samantha Morton from The Whale. So
I thought I just heard that line in my mind all over again.
How do you know about the money? You think I'm an idiot? You think I would believe that you were coming over here out of the kindness of your heart?
Wow, so I think I got like a D plus.
You know, we will put a grade on this. Not everyone can remember everything that they've done, but my last two bits for you, and this is what we're going to close out with. This whole award season has been about, you know, the feel good purity comeback stories, not just regarding you, seeing the Daniels get their due. Kiyu Kwan, co-star of Encino Man, making his big return with you the same year. I want to publicly tell you that I'm mad at you because I go to the Critics' Choice Awards to have fun, not to cry when Brendan Fraser is winning Best Actor, and then have you shake my hand on the way up. So that was great. But still, it's very moving. What has this whole season meant for you when you look back 30 years from now? Man in a rocking chair.
It feels like it is an affirmation that everything that I tried to achieve from 30 years ago through my career up till now was all leading up to this point. The good, the bad, the indifferent, whatever. Everything was important. And that also, I have been able to sincerely make friendships with people who I've admired from afar, and certainly all the nominees. I've learned that there's a profound respect that gets born of finding yourself in that I was not anticipating. I was hopeful for, I'm going to look back on it for that reason. It feels like, you know, inclusion, which is something that we all want in a way. We've all felt like we've been on the outside and you want to be in, you know, and what are you willing to do? And what must you do to feel like you're included? And this is an acknowledgement of that, well, the answer is have your work be recognized by your peers in a meaningful way.
And the last question, because Whose Babe Was It Anyway, isn't just random. The reason why we did that, because I found a little bit of a similarity, a common thread between you and Key this season. I'm going to get you some brownie points that you can ride for a while. You both have the love of an outstanding woman behind you. Key with Echo and your loving better half. So I want to give you an opportunity to give that take of, you know, being able to get through this with a partner.
Love and support is everything. None of it's lost on me. And that goes for my kids, too.
That's The Whale star Brendan Fraser, nominated this year for Best Actor at the Oscars. The Whale is now out in limited theaters and available on demand. Tar star Kate Blanchett's central performance is a favorite after the two-time Oscar winner walked away with BAFTA, Golden Globe, and Critics' Choice Prizes. Todd Field's psychological drama about a lesbian conductor's rise and fall landed 6 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture, Director, Original Screenplay, Cinematography, and Film Editing, in addition to Kate Blanchett's nod for Best Actress.
Writer-director Todd Field's first feature in 16 years is by far his most confident. Abandoning the tropes of a conventional thriller that may or may not have the big plot twist that many lean on, which depends on your interpretation of the movie, instead, he replaces them with a suspenseful and deeply provocative tale of power, intrigue, and mystery. As Oscar season winds down, I caught up with Blanchett one more time to talk about Tar and her experiences on the campaign trail. I began by asking her what she remembered about her first Oscar nomination in 1998 for Elizabeth.
Yeah, well, because it was such an unusual film, it was really at the head of that sort of Bollywood meets West hybrid. Shekhar Kapoor directing it, and you know, we had a famous soccer star, Eric Cantona, playing the Duke of Anjou, and we had people from the north playing English lords and ladies, which within English culture just kind of traditionally hadn't happened at that point. It felt like such a bizarre. Ending my career before I'd begun moment. So the fact that people lent into it, and it was my first time, you know, talking to people who were passionate about a film that I'd been in. It was very early on. So the whole thing was such a steep learning curve. And then to be nominated for, I thought people were joking when they said I had an Academy nomination. Yeah. It was a really, you know, incredible moment, and I was suddenly in conversation with people that I'd been admired my whole life, and couldn't believe I was in the same room as them. I still can't, you know, because I think every job you do, you it's quite an interesting process. I think the more you do, the more you realize you don't know anything. So you have to let go of every film after you've made it, and you know, if you're involved in the post production process as I was on this one, you have to try and find the film afresh, and then you have to talk to people about it, which of course is another process again. But yeah, it's this particular one, I felt I was starting at ground zero again, because I knew nothing about the world in which it took place. Yeah. And she was such an enigmatic character. And the conversation, you know, that is alive in the film felt so kind of dangerous but vital. You know, I was so excited but nervous to think about how an audience might receive it. And once again, I thought, well, that's the end of everything. Yeah.
I'd like to thank you publicly for getting Todd Field out of this 16-year break, because I've missed him very, very much, and he's a very, very important voice to cinema.
He is.
And his crowning work, and that says something, because I'm such a big fan of Little Children and In the Bedroom very much. How does he compare to all the great directors that you have worked with throughout your career?
Well, Scorsese talks about directing as always knowing the, you know, your skill is that you need to know where to put the camera. You know, if you cast it well, and you know your pre-production has been great, and you've got the right production design and costume design and all of those things, cinematographer, then you need to know how to look at who you're looking at, what you're looking at. And Todd every single day would know where to put the camera. And he'd set it up, and he goes, no, it needs to be 2 feet to the left. You know, jib up a bit. Yeah. Okay. He was so meticulous and diligent about and laser sharp with his focus. But yet, as a director, I don't know whether this comes as from him being a jazz musician and an actor himself, is he's so fluid. Yep. It's almost like somebody else wrote the screenplay other than him. You know, I'd often go up to him and I'd say, look, you know, say in the opening shot of the film where I'm backstage and the character's backstage, and she's hearing all of these sounds in the script. There was a long description of all the things that she was hearing, because she's got this thing called misophonia, which is a hypersensitivity to sound. So people unwrapping sweet wrappers and the tops off bottles. And there were obviously a lot of cutaways to those things. And I was looking at the time. I said, don't we need to get all these cutaways? He said, no, no, I'm not going to do any of that. So he'd responded to what was going on in the performance and decided he didn't need to shoot that. And so that's the wonderful thing about working with him, is the screenplay is one resource to make the film. He's always in search of the film, which is a really, really exciting environment to be in. Wow. Everything's up for grabs.
Yeah.
So you got to keep him working. Tell him to get back to work now because I can't wait 16 more years.
You know, but the amazing thing about him is, you know, we all focus on the fact that he hasn't made a feature film. But in that time, he has been experimenting with lenses, with lighting, with cameras, with perspective. He's always looking and always listening. He's so alive as a human being, you know. And meanwhile, you know, what all good artists do is they actually live their life, and they don't live their life to put it on screen. He's had such a rich life, and I think all of these things have been brought to bear on the film. I think that's why, even though the film is dealing with a lot of thorny, big questions, watching people do unpalatable things that we often do when we're in private, it's very human and really funny. Yeah. He's a really, really funny guy.
He's the best. I'd like to thank you for also coming to my Nina Haas fan club meeting today.
We have the t-shirts.
Yes, we have the t-shirts, and I'm not going to stop talking about her until the entire world knows how special she is to this medium of cinema, because she is so, so talented.
And such a great collaborator.
Yeah.
Her perspective on the character of Sharon Goodenough, who is life partners with Lydia Tarr, just was a complete revelation for Todd and I. It opened up a whole subterranean layer in the film about who enables the powerful, you know, and what is the sort of the benefit, the extraneous benefit from keeping the system of power as it is. And it's not always the person at the top who is the most powerful. It's not the most public-facing person in a relationship who is often the most powerful. There is such a thing as a kingmaker. And so she brought that aspect to Sharon and said, I don't think she's entirely innocent, and which was it, the conversation with her was so enlivening. She's a wonderful team player and such an exquisite and surprising actress. I was so lucky to finally get to work with her.
My favorite romantic lead of yours, of your entire career, is definitely Nina Me Haas. Too. I will always cherish that. I have to ask about the Tar short that was in Berlin that will only screen once, and I wasn't told about it.
I'm sorry. It was a long way, Clayton.
I would have flown in.
I did say to Todd, you know, eventually whatever the equivalent of the DVD sale is in the future, would he consider putting it on? It was what it was. It was part of the process. That's what was so – because it's a film about process. It's not a film about performance. It's not about the result. It's about the way we get to an end point, you know, because works of art like human beings are unfinished businesses. So we decided to try and have quite an open-ended process, and it was – fantastic, because a lot of the audiences have picked up on a lot of the subtextual stuff that we filmed, thinking this probably won't make it to the final cut, but we're going to film it anyway. And we had enough material that I said to Todd, why don't you make this into a short? So he and Monica Willey, one of the world's great editors, made a short out of it. And so I'm trying to convince him to sort of release it in some way. That's what Criterion's
for. Like, we could just get that going.
Yeah.
One thing that I've loved so much about you, and you are considered, and by many of us, to be one of the greatest living actresses. And
by my husband.
Yeah.
You've been talking to them.
Yeah. But what I love about you is that you take that responsibility seriously. And what I say by that is you use your platform, your status, to also champion other actors. You talked a lot about this season, Michelle Yeoh, Andrea Riseborough, Tang Wei, who wasn't nominated.
Tang Wei's performance in Decision to Leave was one of the great performances this year. Guzlawi Malanda. I mean, one of my favorite films of this year was Saint-Omer, Alice Diop. And I mean, both actresses were extraordinary.
Mm. I had a joke with one of my colleagues here earlier in the season, like way before I even saw it. I was like, we're going to have Nina Haas and Tang Wei for me this year. I was like, this is too much of a perfect world. But yeah, you take that responsibility to champion them. I want to ask you, does it ever get – it's got to be frustrating sometimes that I think people, and I mean the public, forget that this is an art form. That's something that you really deeply care about. So there's like the celebrity aspect, that the public facing thing. But you all are giving yourselves to something that you love. Does that ever frustrate you sometimes that gets lost in messaging when you take on a role such as Lydia Tarr. They think it's like they see the facing part of it is like, okay, you got an Oscar nom for it, but you believed in the project. You believed in the movie. You believed in the vision that was Todd Field, like what he had to say. Does that ever get lost?
Look, I think it's wonderful when the risks, the creative risks one takes are recognized or rewarded, or that and, you know, both Todd and I really, really respect and value that relationship with an audience. And, you know, that people pick up on, the audience picks up on things that you were only, could only dreamt that they would pick up on. That's really rewarding. And when different critics groups or industry groups recognize that work, that is wonderful. But in the process of making it, and I hazard a guess that this is the same for all films that are being celebrated, or maybe celebrated in the future, because not all films find their audience straight away. You know, as you say, that's what these libraries are for, online and, you know, in actuality, you know, to discover films later that didn't necessarily rise to the surface that particular year.
That's Justice for Bandits, by the way.
Yeah, always. I love making that movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, you can't, in the process of it, I think a film that's going to cut through is one that feels like you are just in the process of making it, on the, you know, you are on the edge of a precipice in some way, you know, that you're risking something that may not, you may not be able to pull this off, you know, like standing on the podium in front of the Dresden Philharmonic. It's like, this may not work, you know. And so it's a dance that you do, not only with the cast members and of course the director and the cinematographer, but with the crew, you know. And I felt, maybe it's coming out of the pandemic, but it felt like we were all tightly knit and on that same adventure. And I think it's, you know, it's such a surprising, wonderful pleasure to be able to speak and be in dialogue with an audience about something that you've been so passionate about. But does that answer your question?
It does.
Does it
frustrate you when people talk about what you do and what the other actors do so superficially, not seeing that, seeing it as, I think you see acting as art, like this is an art form for you, whereas
I think it's an empathetic art form. And I think you, look, I think there's as many different types of actors and processes as there are genres and movies. And if you look at this year, it is such an eclectic array of visions, you know. And I think that when they're all smashed together and they're meant to make one homogenous whole, that's a little bit depressing, because their ambitions are so wildly different, you know. And that there's no one actor, there's no one director, there's no one movie. Is that my personal taste is so wildly eclectic, you know. And so I think it's probably to be expected, because, you know, sometimes the way we do interface, because there's so much on, there's so much to do, there's so much preoccupying all of us, we can't be deep about everything. Sometimes we have to have a glancing conversation. But I mean, the thing with this particular film, you know, in the hands of Todd Field, I do think it will stand the test of time. So people who haven't had the chance to see it and experience the sound, like the sound in this film is so extraordinary, we'll hopefully have the chance to do so in the future, you know.
Oh, for sure. Thank you for that. I'm going to touch one more thing about if you won an Oscar this year. Aside from it being your third, you will bring to life the nine-year prophecy that we believe that Cate Blanchett only wins Oscars every 9 years.
Is that right?
Yes.
Right. Oh, God, you're really dating Aviator me.
And Blue Jasmine.
Was that long ago?
So if you win this year, just know that you are free to do the circuit for the next 9 years. But looking at all your Oscar nominations, Elizabeth, The Aviator, which you won, Supporting Actress, Notes on a Scandal, which is quietly kind of one of my top three.
That was
plays.
A fun one.
I like, that's my
that
jam.
That was a fun one.
I'm Not There, and Elizabeth the Golden Age, Blue Jasmine, Carol, and now Tar. Very few people will ever know what it feels like to get an Oscar nomination, let alone have an Oscar. I know you've expressed gratitude about receiving this from your peers and feeling this honor. What does it feel like as you continue down that path? Because Hollywood used to have this idea that women stop being interesting after a certain age. They wouldn't make movies or give great roles for women over a certain age. And you're killing it now, still continuously. And I've seen a shift in that industry. Are you feeling that as well?
Well, we're still talking about it, aren't we? But if, you know, you look at the SAG Awards this year, I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis, Michelle Yeoh, you know, all of, so many of the women up there were, have had long illustrious careers. Yeah. And I am so grateful to the women before me who have been trailblazers, the Jane Fondas, the Meryl Streeps, the Liv Ullmanns, from all different cultures, that Helen Mirrens and Judi Dench, we're talking about Judy, and who have really continually pushed the boundaries and supported women coming up, underneath them. But also the fact that you've got female showrunners, female producers, female directors. I mean, hopefully in 5 years' time, it's an unremarkable thing. But unfortunately, I think, and particularly speaking of Tar in the classical music world, being female is still seen as being a political act. We're still remarking on it, and hopefully we'll get to the point where it is unremarkable. But my concern too is not just the pointy end, the acting end of it. I think it's also making sure that the crews are diverse, not only culturally, and from a gender point of view, but also, generationally.
Yep.
I think it's really important that generationally, I mean, there's a lot of that sort of generational divide that is, and, the power of people in their advanced position of their career versus the powerlessness that people at the beginning of their career seem to be expected to have or may have in relation to that. That's very much alive in the film. So I think that generational sharing of the goods, I think, is really important.
That's Cate Blanchett, Oscar-nominated star of Tar. The film is now playing on Peacock. And that's it for this edition of the Variety Award Circuit Podcast. Zach Levin edited this episode and Michael Schneider is the producer. Be sure to subscribe to the Award Circuit Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Also, head on over to Variety.com and click on the Award Circuit tab to find the latest awards predictions and key races, as well as your daily fix of news, analysis, and reviews. For Jazz Tanke, Janelle Riley, and Michael Schneider, I'm Clayton Davis. We'll see you on the circuit.